Beyond the Mic with Sean Dillon.
We're joined at the start line by a country rock pioneer. You've heard his work in Hearts and Flowers, Dillard and Clark, and the Flying Burrito Brothers. A founding member of the Eagles, his latest solo album is Too Late to Be Cool. We welcome Bernie Ledden.
Hey there, how are you?
Absolutely great, Bernie. Let's go beyond the mic.
Okay.
What was the feeling creating Too Late to Be Cool?
Okay. So I was out on the road with the Eagles, the history of the Eagles tour in 2013, 14, and 15. You know, we did a lot of shows and there's a lot of time together. But I was playing very well and I was enjoying it playing. And so I wanted to continue the creative flow when I got home. And so I've been collecting vintage recording equipment for a long time. And so I wanted to build a new building to put it all in, so that it was handy, you know, ready to use. And so it took about 5 years to get that done. So that took us to 2020. Then we had the lockdown and all that stuff. But I knew I would need songs. So, and I actually used the lockdown to just write a lot, you know. Over the last 10 years, I've written a lot of songs. So my old friend Glenn Johns came over to help me tweak the studio and get it ready to use. And we started recording last summer of 24, continued and finished this album in January and February. But we had about 100 songs to pick from. And we,
wow.
I think I showed maybe 30 to Glenn. And then we pared that down. We recorded maybe 15 and then pared that down to 11 for the album. So it was a process.
How does recording analog versus digitally change the way you record and hear an album?
Your question is apt, because it does change how you do it, because you are forced to make decisions as you go, because 2-inch tape is either 16 track or 24 track. In my case, Glenn likes to work 16 track, which is fine with me. The music doesn't really need more than that, but you can't keep 10 vocals and 15 guitar parts. You have to make decisions, right? And Glenn is very matter of fact about the whole process. So, you know, he plays the vocal back and, you know, if you say, well, I want to redo that part or something, he goes, why don't you just do another one, man? And I go, you mean erase the other vocal? He goes, yeah, no problem. I thought you were going to do a better one, right? So he just puts it in record and hits play. And now it's in record. It's erasing the old vocal. And, you know, you better sing and you better do it better than you did the last one. So it does keep you in the moment and keep you focused. And I think it's great when it's time to mix. It's not a problem because there's not that much to mix, really.
Why did recording this album this way give it a throwback to some of the greatest albums of all time that used to have 16 or less tracks?
Okay, so another part of your earlier question is, how did we do it? So we had four musicians sitting in the same room, looking at each other, listening and changing what you're playing or how it feels, you know, going along with the vibe that's happening, like it is on stage in a live performance, right? So I think what Glenn Johns does is he captures a performance, but it's all about getting ready to record, you know. So, but I used three friends who are great Nashville session players who know how to play like a band. And the thing about them is they just sit there and make a chart. You play the song 3, 4, 5, 6 times, and they make a good chart. And then you can go out and they won't make any mistakes in the first take. So sometimes the one that ends up on the record is the first, second, and third take. So it makes you work faster, but you get this cohesive result because everybody's actually there listening and to one another and playing at the same time. And then you do minimal overdubs. Like I layered a couple of guitars, you know, and background vocals get put on later. But I even sang some live lead vocals on this album, three of them, which I had never done maybe only once before in my lifetime. So a lot of it has to do with Glenn Johns. A lot of it has to do with having the songs written ahead of time. And I have the arrangement in my head pretty much. We make a chart of that arrangement. Great players that can read the chart, not make mistakes. And then so it's dare I say, a professional environment.
Bernie, you have led an incredible life. Do you truly believe that it's too late to be cool?
No, so the joke there is that my son asked me when he was about, well, he didn't ask me. He informed me when he was 13 that, Dad, I am the cool guy now, not you. You're not cool anymore. Yeah, but now he's 45 years old, not 13. And so now he thinks I'm cooler than he did when I was 13, I think.
You said, quote, some stories take decades to finish. Why I left, why I'm back. How has music touched your soul and who inspired you to return?
Well, I've never left. I mean, you know, 2013 through 15, that was a nearly 3-year commitment to work with the Eagles and do all the shows. But for me, music started in the home. My mom was a great 1940s stride piano player. When she was in school, when she was in high school, she had a job down at the big department store in Minneapolis. Back when they had sheet music departments, and a hit song was it sold a lot of sheet music, not a lot of records. And so people would come in, they had all these sheet music bins, and they had this teenage girl sitting there at a piano, and people would bring a piece of sheet music over.
And she played it.
Like, and she'd play it for them because they wanted to see if they wanted to buy that piece of sheet music and learn it. So she could sight read, and she was really good. And then she played the organ in the choir, and my dad sang in the choir at church. So I heard all this great old church music and harmonies and when I was really young. And then I took piano at age six, and I took trombone and piano when I was 12, and I was in a marching and concert band until I started playing guitar and banjo when I was like 13, 14. So really it was always just a continuum of being in a musical environment of one type or another.
Bernie Ledden's newest solo album is Too Late to Be Cool. And Bernie, it's time for the Rocky Nate. 8 random questions. Just trust your first instinct.
Okay.
What was the last thing you harvested from your farm?
Grass.
Hey. What's your go-to way to unwind that isn't music-based?
Well, first thing in the morning, I get up pretty early, 6 o'clock, 6:30, make a robust cup of coffee and sit out on my porch with the dog and listen to the morning sounds. And so that's in the morning. But I basically do the same thing later in the day also, you know. Sit outside somewhere and check it out.
I know this is going to be tough, but who are the top 3 guitar players of all time?
Well, I don't know about that, but I could name, I'll give you 4 because I identify 4 Fender Telecaster players.
Okay.
So James Burton, Clarence White, those are on the country side, and then more on the R&B and blues side would be Steve Cropper from the Stax Band and Booker T and the MGs, Jesse Ed Davis, who was this full-blooded Native American guitar player from Tulsa, who played with, who did 3 classic albums with Taj Mahal in the late 60s.
Wow. What do your grandkids call you?
Pops.
I'm dreading. I'm not sure what my grandkids are going to call me.
Well, I'll tell you what happened to me. So my first grandchild was 2 years old. It was her 2-year-old birthday, and her mother brought her over to me as I was leaving the party and said, she's talking now, what would you like her to call you? And I just blurted it out without thinking, Pops. So that's been it. All the grandkids call me Pops. So you may not have time to make a decision.
First banjo you ever owned was what, and do you still have it?
No, I don't. It was a really crummy K banjo. What I really wanted was a Vega, and so I have a Vega now and some Gibsons also, but the Vega was open back, no resonator, and the one I had that was so crummy was like a K, I think, but it was at the time it was really cheap, and so anyway I quickly moved on, but the Vega is amazing.
Instant follow-up time. What string do you break the most?
Typically, on acoustic guitar, I always break the G string because it's the smallest wound string. And if I'm beating the crap out of the guitar, like say I'm doing rhythm guitar in a studio hired by someone, you know, to play for someone else for 6 hours, and I beat on that guitar. So I would usually put a new set on at the beginning of the day and I could still break a G-string. So I always carry extra G-strings.
Bernie, who's the one artist, living or gone, that you would love to jam with for one song? What would you play?
Gee whiz, I don't really know. I'll tell you what I did really enjoy a lot. I did a lot of it early in my career and her career, was sing one-on-one with harmony with Linda Ronstadt.
Wow.
And I had to learn to sing full voice because she didn't have a governor back in the beginning. She always sang pretty full voice, and she had she had pipes, right? She's an amazing singer, and I had to bring the volume and the level of my harmony up to be allowed enough to blend with her. But I also got to do that with she and Emmylou Harris and myself. And we did that as recently as, I think, 2000 or 1999. But to sing with them in a nice sounding room, like a small performing arts center or something, where the voices just go out, or like the Lyman Auditorium in Nashville, there's really nothing like it. It's just like, wow, you know.
Where's the favorite place in the world just to think other than your front porch?
To think?
Yeah.
The beach.
Really?
Yeah, the beach. I mean, and by that I mean, typically, I mean the ocean. California or Florida is where I'm used to. But lakes are great, too, you know.
Who do you admire the most in music right now?
Right now? I don't know. Maybe the kid that is discouraged. He wanted to do it, and it's not working out so good so far. And he's struggling with rent and getting enough to eat. And I would just say to that kid, male or female, hang in there. If you love it and you give everything you have, it'll work out for you.
We're talking to Bernie Lennon, Beyond the Mic with the Back Half. Bernie, what do you want people to feel when they hear Too Late to Be Cool?
Well, I think, I mean, it's an interesting song. I mean, I think first of all, it has a great groove, and it's a kind of upbeat, medium upbeat tempo that is in a minor key, which Tom Petty used to do that a lot. You know, I like the lyrics, I like the title, but I really like the chord progression, and so I just think it has a nice vibe, and I think that's why it became the title track and the emphasis track, you know. So, I mean, I think it's a fun song to listen to. So I hope you have a good time listening to it.
Definitely. How has reflecting on the past help you plan for the future?
Well, I don't know about planning on the future, man. How about living the present? You know, it's the future will take care of itself if I live well in the present. And I'm so experiences of the past help me be a better songwriter today and have things to say. So, I mean, the past informs the present, and the present will, the future will take care of itself, so I'm not worried about it.
Amen to that. Bernie, what's the most challenging song for you on this album?
Probably Everyone's Quirky, because it's really kind of a small jazz combo kind of song. And that took the longest to record of all the ones on the album. It was challenging to do it all, to play all those parts. It's about 6-7 different guitar sections too. There's a lot of sections, but also what was fun at the end of that song is it does these kind of horn stabs in the end with the whole band, and it's a direct quote from Miles Davis off the Kind of Blue album. I think the song title was What's Up or something like that. It just goes da da in a minor key a bunch of times, and so anyway, it's a direct quote of Miles Davis off the Kind of Blue album. And we snuck that in there. But, you know, anybody that's heard Miles Davis will recognize it.
Looking back at your life, what is the feeling in your heart when you hear fans applaud?
Thank God I can make a living at this.
Why is playing music special to you?
Well, actually, I would say this about the 2013-15 Eagles tours is I got to go back out and hear the appreciation that the fans, so many of them, have and have had for the music. And that's very gratifying, you know, because I've had people say that, you know, Take It Easy or another song meant a lot to them. And there was a song, album cut that I wrote, actually with Patty Davis, who's Ronald Reagan's daughter, called I Wish You Peace, in different, especially back in the 70s and 80s, people would tell me that they used that song at their wedding, you know, and I'm like, well, that's pretty cool. So and basically, if you have a popular song, it means that people have lived a piece of their life to your soundtrack, and they're kind of always connected to it. And so they always want to hear it again because it reminds them of some great event in their life. And so it's a pretty cool thing that music becomes when it becomes popular, to informs and hopefully uplifts people's lives. You know?
Now, how did working with Glenn Johns help you put a better product out?
We've been really close friends ever since the Eagles in 1972, and he used me on a lot of projects. So it was great work. I mean, fantastic working with my really good friend. And he was also my recording technique mentor, and a lot of the equipment that I bought was because it helps you work the way that Glenn works, which is just everybody in one room working quickly and not making a big fuss about it. And so working with him was like falling off a log, man. We're so used to each other, and it was really a joyful thing to do. It was great.
Bernie, how has the way you write evolved and improved since starting?
Well, yeah, that's an interesting topic. I don't worry about writing. So these days, what I've learned is you just have an idea. Maybe you get the first line or something like that, or a guitar riff, maybe a whole guitar section or two in the musical part. But the lyrics, once I start writing the lyrics, I just do stream of consciousness. I used to write in longhand, and lately I've been doing it more on the laptop. But you just, as long as you have another line to write down, just write it down. Don't judge it. Don't think about it. Just do stream of consciousness as long as it'll come, and just don't judge any of it. Then if you think you got a song, then you just take a break. And when you come back to it, then you start the other part of writing, which is editing, refining. And that goes on for days and weeks, down to small words, and should there be an article word in front of the line, like the or a, you know, a tree, the tree, or should just be tree. And there was somebody, a singer, background singer and singer, that told me years ago, leave off those little words at the front of lines, because people will know what you mean anyway. It'll sing a lot better. You know?
We're talking with Bernie Ledden, Beyond the Mic. Who influenced your decision focusing on authenticity rather than commercial success? And would you change your mind about that today?
No, I started out in guitar and vocal music back in the folk era before the Beatles. So early 60s. And then the Beatles happened, and like David Crosby said, we all sold our acoustic guitars and got electric guitars, but I kept my acoustic guitar and got an electric guitar. But I think a lot of the aesthetic of what I do comes back from that folk era, where it was a lot of people doing a lot of traditional songs, but also writing in that vein. So Dylan and Phil Oakes and many others were writing in the vein of traditional songs, but writing new stuff. And so I still think of myself in that, coming from that heritage, you know. And so I like story songs, and I like songs with a melody. You know, I mean, it got to where the business got to where melody was kind of not that important anymore, but I think it is important. So I think it's all important, and I think it matters. And so to me, it's not just a commercial potato chip. You know, I think it should be better than that.
You've always believed in a music first philosophy. Has the music industry changed to the fans' detriment?
I can't say that, but I will say it this way. If what the music industry is providing to the consumer or fans fails to meet their expectations or their needs, then they will find other ways to obtain what they are interested in and they need. And so there's pretty robust independent music business out there. And there are people that do it not full time also. That, I mean, my brother is an architect, but he has a bluegrass in Brooklyn, New York. And they have jams, you know, in an Irish pub. And they did a brilliant thing. They printed about 100 bluegrass song lyric sheets and put them in plastic envelope, you know, plastic sheets, protector sheets. And so if somebody's, they say, hey, Joe, why don't you sing such and such? Or why don't you sing something? And they go, oh, I can't remember any lyrics. They'll just hand them a lyric sheet. So nobody has an excuse, but I think a lot of, music actually is, you could say amateurs or part-time musicians who do it for fun as a hobby and don't try to make a living of it, you know, but that fulfills a lot of people's needs too.
Bernie, how do you view the current state of Americana and country rock today?
I think the Americana Music Association just had their Americana Festival last month in September. And it seems that we're all Americana now, you know? So I think that the Americana genre is going to expand and it's going to devour every other label or genre. So basically, we're all Americana now, pal.
How has your love sustained you, and what does one hug from them mean today?
Oh, well, you can't replace family. So, I mean, you know, family, marriage, relationship, especially siblings and grandparents, aunts, uncles, and cousins, nieces and nephews. I mean, that's society. That's the basic building block of society, you know, and the people who have communities used to have clans back in the old days. And then we have states and nation states, you know, and so that's how society is constructed. So family is the foundation.
Bernie, what's the best memory of your brother growing up?
Oh, he was a really good, my brother, Tom, that's who we're talking about, everybody. But and my brother was 5 years younger than me. And so when we moved to Florida in 1964, the British invasion was happening. And so we all got electric guitars, as I said earlier. And so I had a top 40 band with Don Felder in Gainesville, Florida. And my brother, Tom, had a top 40 band in Gainesville with Tom Petty when Tom Petty was 14. But I think the athletic stuff, my brother, Tom, was a very outgoing guy, and he was quite a good athlete, played quarterback in grade school, you know. I think he was a pitcher also in baseball. So he was quite an athlete and good musician, but he was a great brother, you know, good guy.
Now you play electric, acoustic guitar, banjo, dobro, mandolin, and pedal steel. What's the instrument you wished you learned?
Tuba.
Really?
Actually, I did play trombone. I never did. So trombone is the same pitch in the brass band as a baritone horn. Basically, a baritone looks like a small tuba, and you carry it up like this, upright.
Yep.
Yeah, and a trombone was easier to carry to the bus. So I gave up the baritone horn and took up trombone because it was lighter to carry to the bus. But also, you got to march in the front of the band. So I was already a show-off, so I played trombone.
You played with and for some incredible artists in your life. What's one story from the road that still makes you chuckle today?
You mean that's legal?
Whatever you want. I think the statute of limitations is over now.
Yeah, I don't know. Chuckle? Well, I guess we found a good Mexican restaurant. That always made me chuckle. I don't know. You know?
What's one quality of a good Mexican restaurant?
Well, again, like just like the music, authenticity and good ingredients and somebody that knows what the hell they're doing, you know. But I grew up in San Diego before I moved to Florida, and there was great, unbelievably good Mexican food in San Diego. I've never had a tamale that tasted like those tamales ever again. I do have high standards in this area.
Time for the impossible question with Bernie Ledden beyond the mic. What's the one thing you wish you did sooner and the one thing you wish you never did?
Oh, Lord.
I call it the impossible question for a reason.
Well, yeah. So I guess I wish I'd tried sushi earlier in my life, you know. And the one thing I wish I never did?
Yep.
Cocaine.
Wow. Time for one big question. Bernie, in your life, well lived, what do you want people to remember you by?
Oh, there's a good guy, and I mostly told the truth.
He wanted a Vega banjo growing up. Loved singing harmony with Linda Ronstadt. He wants you to hear Too Late to Be Cool. Bernie Ledden, thanks for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thanks. That was a lot of fun, man. Thank you.
And that, my friends, is Beyond the Mic.
If you're enjoying these conversations, please check out another Beyond the Mic episode to find more actors, artists, and people you need to know. We'd also appreciate a like and subscribe on the Good Pods app.